Hello, this is Eric Sinrod, and as my colleague Jonathan Armstrong says, thank you ever so much for joining us today. A little bit British there. I'm in the Duane Morris office in San Francisco, and we're here bringing you our Tech Law 10 weekly report on where the law and information technology intersect. Jonathan, I'll turn it over to you in a second, as I know you want to tell us about your thoughts. I know you're going to be speaking at the e-crime Congress coming up, and you have a tour de force presentation, and maybe you can give us a hint as to what's been on your mind.
Yes, thank you ever so much, Eric, for that. That's most kind indeed. I'm going to be speaking at the e-crime Congress, as you rightly say, and the theme that I've chosen really is to look at the challenges of internal investigations, particularly when technology is involved. And it seems to me that we're in a state of almost the perfect storm. There's more reliance on third parties, things like outsourcing, software as a service, cloud, more cost pressures on businesses, more regulation and enforcement, more issues around geography. Businesses tend to be in more places than they have been in the past. Obviously, more social networking, more value in stolen data, more speed. We're required to do things much more quickly than we used to. And I know our podcast was on that a couple of weeks ago. More whistleblowers, statistically, even in the UK, without the Dodd-Frank bounty provisions that you've just introduced there in the US, even in the UK, whistleblowing's up by about a quarter year on year. More chance of getting caught for corporates or bad actors within those corporations, and obviously much more of a focus on investigations, more subjects in investigations, for example, trying to assert their data privacy rights not to be investigated, almost as we discussed with that US case last week as well. So people, you know, why wouldn't you if you're being evicted from a corporation because of your wrongdoing and you know that you are guilty? Almost why wouldn't you use some sort of procedural measures to try and delay or halt the investigation against you? And at the same time, what I'm seeing is less care, incredibly, being taken over these investigations. Quite often, the people who are running internal security or internal IT security come to it from a law enforcement background. And sometimes the techniques and the options that they have open to them when they're in law enforcement aren't open to them when they move into the private sector. And we've seen that, for example, particularly in this ongoing Renault investigation, where Renault had an investigatory team led by a former military intelligence operative who used techniques that may or may not be acceptable in the French military intelligence operations. Obviously, the French Secret Services notably involved in a, what I guess the French would say, a contretemps with Greenpeace. And they, you know, have unusual tactics, and certainly tactics that would not play well necessarily in the corporate world, and certainly didn't in the Renault investigation when three pretty senior people at Renault were evicted from the business on the basis of this particular investigator's evidence. So we've got less care. We've got proportionately less compliance and legal resource. That's been a victim of the downturn. Headcount's been reduced. We've got, and we've talked about this before as well, Eric, less attention to contractual terms. So when people are outsourcing, putting information in the cloud, they know that they ought to do something around security and have the option to get data back to the mothership to investigate it, but their contracts aren't reflecting that need to do that. And at the same time, we're getting issues around, as I say, the increase in whistleblowers. I mean, I don't know about you, Eric, and I know we're trying to tackle a lot of topics at once, but where I'm from in the northeast of England, I'm from a sort of mining community. Even if something was going wrong in the mine, the chances of my father or my father's father or my father's 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 father saying anything about it were slim, because it's a generational thing, and that was their employer throughout the generations. And so they might discreetly try and do something if there was a safety issue or an issue of fraud or, you know, misweighing the coal or whatever that might be. But that wasn't ever anything that was going to get escalated because the whole family were loyal to that one employer. And, you and I, Eric, had just talked earlier about you know your life as a McDonald's operative.
You're now outing me. Yes, it's true. When I was in high school, I did flip hamburgers and make milkshakes back in the day, and hopefully none of your relatives, your forefathers, were actually the canaries in the coal mine.
No, they weren't. But I mean, I just to end on it, I just did some work for a well-known pharmaceutical business, and the employees of theirs that are the most engaged in social media have an average term at the business of 2.2 years. So, you know, it's not a job for life anymore. And because these people are very active on social media, and because they're only planning on average, or they are in actual fact only at the business for an average of 2.2 years, when they leave the business, you can never guarantee that they're not going to say anything. And when they're with the business, you can't guarantee that they're going to be as loyal as somebody who thinks they're going to be at that corporation for life. So a whole host of different issues. But how do you feel? Are you seeing those same trends over there in the U.S. as well?
Well, yes, you just struck a very responsive chord with me. I've actually had 5 speaking gigs in the last 7 days I've been traveling the state. And one thing that's come up, you know, has to do with how employees, especially out here in Silicon Valley and in the high-tech arena, really do move from one job to another very frequently. Gone are the days where you spend 3 or 4 decades at a company and collect the gold pocket watch at the end of your career. People are moving around. And one of the problems that emerges from that is that, you know, the secret sauce of one particular company can move across the street from company A to company B when that employee goes there after the 2.2 years. And then what happens? And we have issues dealing with that. Here in California, it's difficult to enforce contracts that essentially restrain an employee's ability to move from one job to another. So that's, unless the contractual, you know, restriction against competition is very limited, perhaps by time and by geography. But one way sort of the mothership employers try to, you know, enforce their rights is by saying, well, yeah, fine, you can go work somewhere else, but you certainly can't, you know, violate our trade secrets and empower our competitor with our secrets as to how we operate our business. And there's a lot of litigation in this area. In some states, we have what's called this inevitable disclosure rule, where just by virtue of, if you have a similar position working from going from company A to company B, inevitably you're going to take advantage of the secrets you learned at the prior place of employment. That hasn't been adopted everywhere, and sometimes it has to be proven that you're actually taking advantage of the trade secrets. I'm not trying to hijack your talk here, but you know, you asked me, and this is a ripe topic that comes into play here.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see more and more of it, aren't we? Because data is just so much more portable than it used to be. I know you're heading for some hotel litigation, isn't there, in the U.S., which I think comes for trial soon. And I know we've talked about this before, and I think one of the arguments from the plaintiff in the case is, you know, in the olden days, the information that these guys took when they exited the business would have been in 9 trucks. In the new reality, they walked out with that data in their jacket pockets on 4 memory sticks or whatever it was. And this is the new paradigm that businesses have to deal with. Their valuable assets, I'm also speaking at the Tower of London on Friday, so maybe this is a line I'll use. Their crown jewels, if you like, right, Don't get locked up anymore. They're not in, you know, 12-foot thick walls. They're in people's pockets, they're on people's iPhones, they're on their iPads, and unless you lock down those jewels, then they are going to go walkabout, aren't they?
Yes, the expression, be afraid, be very afraid, is apt, and it also comes into play when we're dealing with the cloud. A number of companies now just want to, you know, save storage space and hire a third-party provider where they can store, you know, remotely, you know, off-site in the cloud, their information. But be careful what you send out there, because if it's your crown jewels, how safe is it really?
I think that's dead right. I'll just make one quick point on that, and it has to be quick because I'm not allowed to talk much more about it. But I've been dealing with just that case this week where an employee procured what he thought was a secure cloud provider. He'd been trained properly. He looked for all the right contractual guarantees. He didn't embody any of that in a written contract because he thought the click wrap agreement with the provider was good enough, and it wasn't, and they were hacked. And my client's now facing a regulatory inquiry, even though they told the employee not to do it, the employee had done it. And that's where you do need to be very certain that you can prove to the regulator that this was a lone wolf that did something wrong. And the cloud, not all cloud providers are the same. And this, I think, is one of the big issues that we'll be discussing at the conference as well.
Understood. Well, listen, we're up to about Tech Law 12 right now, so
right.
Much if there's so much more to say, we probably need to wrap it up for now. So, as always, this is Eric Sinrod in San Francisco. My email is ejsinrod@duanemorris.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter. What else do we have to say? Jonathan, you want to close out here?
Yeah, happy to. And I'm Jonathan Armstrong, jparmstrong@duanemorris.com. You can visit our group on LinkedIn as well. You just go to the top right of the screen, type in Tech Law 10, drop down the box that says groups. It's much easier than I've explained it. But we'll post some materials relevant to today's podcast there. You can go to www.bit.ly/techlaw10 and listen to 40 previous podcasts that we've done on other topics as well. All that
41.
Remains, 41, fantastic.
I think we're on 42 right now, but who's counting?
Excellent. So all that remains is to thank you ever so much for listening, as we usually do. Do tune in next week when Eric and I may even be in the same room and doing the first Tech Law 10 together. But thank you anyway for listening, and do tune back next week.
Yes, bye-bye, and thank you ever so much. Goodbye.